Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a combined project of KCBX and our team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, host Fred Monroe and his guests from Spokes, the nonprofit resource organization, will share with us their work to help nonprofit organizations and their board members to better serve our communities in many ways. You are invited to listen, learn, and participate in this conversation. We are once again able to take your live calls at 805-781-3875. Now let's join Fred and his guests. Over to you, Fred.
All right, thank you, Donna. Glad you're with us today. Glad our listeners are with us today. It's delightful to do a program in the new year as we get things rolling. Central Coast Voices, as you know, really looks at the goals and information that communities should share and how we grow as a community. We spend a lot of time looking at how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. We have an unusual organization. It's somewhat usual in what they're involved in, but unusual as an organization, and that is Spokes, which is a nonprofit research organization. We're going to talk with Michael Simpkins, who is the executive director, and Jordan Jerkovich, who is the program communications assistant for Spokes. It's one of those programs that seems very easy to understand once you know what they do, but until you understand what they do, it's kind of hard to think about whether or not there's a support group for boards and volunteers at nonprofit organizations. And when my guests tell you about how many nonprofit organizations there are in this county, a little later on, you'll get an understanding as to why this is a critical organization. You're welcome to be part of the discussion. We would like you to give us a call at 805-781-3875 with comments, experience with the organization, suggestions or questions for my guests. I would remind you that this is an hour program, and if you wait till 2 minutes before the hour is over to call in with a question, it probably won't get answered. So I encourage you to call in reasonably early in the program. I'm aware of Spokes because I happen to serve on a nonprofit board that's a member of Spokes. But I have to confess, before that service with that particular board, I had no idea what Spokes was, and pretty to some extent had no idea how long they'd been around. So I guess I'm going to turn it over to Michael and Jordan first, and that is, how long has Spokes been around, and is it the only organization of its kind in the county? Is it the only organization of its kind within the purview of most of our listeners?
I'll answer the second question first, which is yes, that's easy. Yeah, we are the only nonprofit support center in our county. There are similar organizations in other parts of the state, and I'm sure in other parts of the country as well. But Spokes started out, its name before it rebranded as Spokes was the Nonprofit Support Center. And that's a little more, you know, self-explanatory, possibly. And I don't know the exact year that began, but we've been Spokes for about 12 or 13 now.
So is this a model that the organization learned from other similar organizations?
I don't know the genesis of whether we learned it or not. I know that prior to my being involved, and I've been involved now since, 2008 at least, in one capacity or another. The Nonprofit Support Center operated in both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. And at some point, there was a schism and a separation, and it became a San Luis Obispo, you know, only organization. And it was around that time that led to the rebranding of it as well. But its overall purpose, in a way, is from the intent of the funders is that the nonprofits of our county be well managed, kind of in a nutshell.
So on a daily basis, your clientele is fellow boards that are nonprofits that are members, the community as a whole. What do you look at as kind of your, if you will, your daily goal for what you need to get done to make it feel like it's been a valuable experience? Jordan's
going to
answer
because
the look on Jordan's face was there's an answer here and I'm not sure you like it, but we'll have you go ahead.
Well, I think it varies who we're serving on a day-to-day basis, and Michael and I might also be serving. Michael might be helping somebody who wants to start a nonprofit get an understanding of how to do that. Where I might be hosting a roundtable for executive directors who are needing support in that role. So our spokes mission is to provide support and expert resources to nonprofits. So that is, includes a nonprofit's board of directors, its executive director or CEO, as well as staff and volunteers. So it looks a little bit different, I would say, every day. Right, Michael?
That's not a bad way to put it, yeah. For concrete examples, I spent yesterday facilitating a four-hour meeting with two nonprofit organizations that are considering partnering to create a center. I won't go into a lot of details because they're still in the process. And so they needed help from an outside person to be able to clarify their vision, decide if they really do want to partner up on this project or not, and to understand what would be involved if they did move forward in terms of fundraising needs and, to get a building built if that's what they decided to do. Earlier in the week, I met with the directors of an organization that's going to dissolve and be over with. And they need help getting through that process because there's a bunch of paperwork and steps to take. And in the same week, another organization, as Jordan mentioned, some people who want to start a new nonprofit to help them understand what they need to do to get that accomplished and what they should know before they do it.
When I invited Spokes as an organization to come on the program, one of the things that that prompted that was the fact that you're having a board academy that starts next week, and we'll get into that in some more details in a little bit. But I was aware of the fact that there's a lot of people who are involved in communities or move to a community or whose life changes based on retirement or change in family or whatever, that have time and resources available and are more concerned about time and interest than resources at the moment, that it's never occurred to them that find a nonprofit organization that you might have some interest in, and find out what they need as far as volunteers. But there's also the situation where you may discover there's a nonprofit that could use your help and support that doesn't have an expertise you have that they would like to serve on their board. I got hoodwinked into joining a board for that very reason, which we can talk about at some later point in the program. But I had some knowledge of conducting meetings and being part of that kind of responsible party. I had no real knowledge of the product and the service of the board. So my thought about doing this program with both of you today was not so much that we'll be talking to people who are already involved in spokes or boards, But in some cases, people who have not done that before at all or not done it locally but lived here someplace before, how do you reach out to and what do you coach your boards and organizations with when they are looking for new help, new support, new resources in the community from new members? Because there's not like a Craigslist of who wants to join nonprofit organizations, but there's probably an awful lot of people who only haven't done so because they haven't been asked. So what do you do with the organizations who are spokesmembers to maybe teach them better how to ask for volunteers or ask for board members?
Let's take board members first. So one of the things, in fact, we have our Board Academy coming up, and one session of the Board Academy, which is an opportunity for people who are either on a board or thinking about being on a board to learn what's involved. And one session is on what's called, we call it maintaining a healthy board. So maintaining a healthy board, one aspect of that is continuing to have a board that is functioning well, and people come and people go from boards. Many, many, many boards have term limits that people can only serve on the board so many years. So one piece of advice, critical, is what we call creating a board matrix. And it's basically a list of traits that an organization wants to be sure are represented among those people on the board. And that set of traits, and it's a matrix because if you map it out on a piece of paper, you're going to put people's names at the top of some columns and then see which of the traits on the left fit the people at the top and how many. So an example, I happen to be on the board myself of Slow Rep, San Luis Obispo Repertory Theater. And our matrix includes different skill sets, like we want to be sure that we have somebody on the board that has a good financial background, understands numbers, and we need to be sure we have somebody who is good at helping us all know what to do for fundraising. Right now we're in a building, a campaign to build a new theater, so we want somebody with building expertise, not that they're going to build it, but to just help advise us when we're getting information from contractors that want to build this new theater. But besides those different kinds of skills, we also want geographic representation. We want North County, South County, Coast, City, because we're a countywide organization. We also try to keep, as we're looking for new people, gender balance, diversity on our board. Leadership is another trait. We want to have at least some people on the board who are willing to be and able and capable of being the president and the secretary and the treasurer. That's actually when we left off. So it all depends on the organization. The Botanical Garden might have a somewhat different set of traits they'd want. But then if you identify that, well, instead of just saying, oh, we need another board member, we have a vacancy, you start by looking and saying, what's the missing thing? Oh, we don't, we need more women on our board. We are all men. We need somebody under 70. We need somebody that's from North County. So now we know we're looking for a less than 70-year-old North County woman that might be interested in whatever the mission of our organization. It helps you find that person if you know what you're looking for, instead of just, oh, well, who knows someone that might be on our board?
Right. And I think that's kind of the matrix is kind of having a matrix is the best case scenario, right? And also like a succession plan of sorts for when people term out, there's somebody already on the list that you're thinking about or that you've been having conversations with that could be interested. But again, I think that's the best case scenario. And a lot of our nonprofits don't sometimes have that advantage, and they're just looking for board members. And I think that's a really important piece of why, we're doing our board academy. And a lot with board service in the new year of just, okay, so, you know, you have a friend that kind of, that you're on a board and you have a friend that, you know, might be somewhat interested and you're trying to get them to join the board, but they don't know much about it. And so to bring on that person, to have them have the education and training to really be an effective board member is a really important, you know, piece of the puzzle. So that's where Spokes comes in to provide that training. And so hopefully it's a good fit and a lasting fit.
So one of the things that you've used the botanical gardens as an example, and I think it's a good example. I should never touch plants. Okay. But I love the things the botanical gardens does, and I have been to a number of their events. But it would never occur to me to join a board for an organization for which I have no expertise in their goal, other than being a recipient of it. And my hunch is for a number of people, that keeps them out of board service until someone opens the door or kicks them in the behind and shoves them through and says, pay attention, there's more here than you think. I think that may be something that for, not so much for the two of you at Spokes, is hard to get addressed, but it may be difficult for you at Spokes to get that message to the boards that you serve. And I'm wondering how you balance that out.
No, I'm not exactly sure I know what you mean.
You have people who may have thought about an organization that they have interest in, but their concept is, because I have no skills related to the topic, I have no agricultural or horticulture skills, they shouldn't put me on the board of the botanical gardens because I know nothing about botanicals. When in reality, maybe the best thing I can offer is that kind of individual who doesn't have those skills, but has a love for the end product of the board. I guess as I'm saying that, it occurred to me probably a good one would be if it's an arts organization. I can't paint, draw, sculpt, or compose music, but I love all of those things. But the fact that I can't do the skills for that organization doesn't make me not become a possible candidate for the board.
Yeah. I think it has to do with people need to understand the role of a board of directors. And the role of the board of directors is governing this nonprofit corporation. And that's a whole different, whether you're the Botanical Garden or you're Cap Slow or you're the theater, the governance function is the same. So let's go back to the example of the garden. If I really love to work in the garden, I may volunteer to plant and care for, you know, get out there with the hoe and the shovel and work in the garden. And that may be the extent of my volunteering, and it's exceedingly important to have those volunteers. But if also and many of our volunteers are retired because that's how they happen to have the time to be volunteers. I'm also a retired banker, mm-hmm. or I'm a retired HR director. Well, now I've got a skill that can help in the governance function of the organization. So then perhaps I'll also find that I could be very useful to the board of directors because of the other skill that I have that's necessary to be a governing board. The organizations, when they're new and they're small and they're all volunteer, the board is mostly doing all the work because they don't have an employee. But when they're doing all the work, they're not being the governing board. They're being volunteers like the person planting. But at part of their meetings, where they're making decisions about where are we going to have our bank account, how are we going to get enough money together to do the next step of our plan. Now they're being the governing board. But when they're addressing all the envelopes to the people they hope will come to their event, they're being volunteer workers. So it's two different hats. So it's if you're going to wear the governing board hat, you don't need to have any skill at the actual thing. It would be good if you had love for it and passion for it, but why would you spend your time on that board otherwise?
That's a good point. Let me remind folks that you can give us a call if you have any questions or comments. If you have any experience with spokes, we'd love to hear your experience with that, or just general questions about the nature of nonprofit organizations on the Central Coast and or the Academy coming up, which we'll get into some specific details for. You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I encourage you to call reasonably early in the hour. We tend to get calls in the last 10 or 12 minutes when we run out of time to address them all, so we would like to have the opportunity for you to be part of that discussion. Michael, before the program, we were talking about a little bit of background information. You spouted a number, which I've now forgotten, and you'll remind me of it, about how many nonprofits there are on the Central Coast or in San Luis County. And I was startled by the number and the nature of that. So let's visit that, because it's of great magnitude.
1,500 is the number I said. I probably said 1,500, but same difference. And as I said, you know, we have one that's about to dissolve and one that's going to start. So on any given day, it might be 1,511. But there's an excellent, people who like to look things up, there's an a website called iCause, I-C-A-U-S-E. And you can search all the nonprofits in the country, and you can filter by geographic area. You can filter by what kind of work they do, if they're human services or animal services or, you know, performing arts. And so that's where you can go and then narrow it down to what you're looking for. So that's where I get that number. And but those include everything from Cal Poly to a little all-volunteer organization that or even if it's not all volunteer, a small, you know, with a budget of $8,000 a year, because they're all 501c3 public benefit nonprofit organizations.
So some of those, I'm suspecting, may be a family philanthropic organization that still needs a board of directors, because if they are dealing with the public and they're a C3 as opposed to a C4, they need to basically have a board.
Yeah, they still have to have a board. I mean, family foundations are certainly a different animal that fits within the same corral.
So the 1,500 does not include those?
I can't. I don't know the answer to that. Okay. I think it may not, frankly. Okay. But and those are smaller in number than all the rest. I mean, you know, it's not going to be a huge percentage, but. If we take family foundations out of the mix,
okay,
then you still have this huge range of size and budget. And so, I mean, it's a practical challenge to spokes, because if you're going to bring all the executive directors together once a month for a roundtable, well, if I'm the executive director of CapSLO, I have a different set of problems and needs and stuff than if I'm the executive director of Orchestra Novo, where I am the only employee. we've talked before about, well, we need to have two different roundtables for, one for the smalls and one for the bigs. We haven't done that, but... by the same token, you know, some kinds of problems, it's also, It's also good for some of the bigger ones, the people in charge of bigger ones, to be together with some of the others because they can be mentors. They have the wisdom to sometimes help the small one figure out a problem. And just because I'm not a big organization doesn't mean that I might not have some insight to your issue that you shared at your big organization.
Yeah. Jordan, you had something to add?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that we actually did a symposium in November of 2024, just this past fall. And I think we invited county nonprofits. It was kind of an opportunity to connect and maybe look for some collaboration opportunities. And I think everybody in the room, was very surprised by the number of nonprofits mm-hmm. in the county. And also the topic of mentorship did come up, and like when we did a follow-up survey about the event of what you know people could use of just you know some further support of you know I think one of our speakers Rita from the Diversity Coalition you know had received some mentorship from you know the CEO of Lumina Alliance and just how beneficial that was to her. And so that's, like Michael was saying, on some of our roundtables and some of our classes, our nonprofits that are big and small get to connect and, yeah, kind of pick each other's brains a little bit about, you know, how they can potentially work together or help each other.
Yeah. When you were mentioning things like the difference in responsibility and the difference in focus for large versus small or large budget versus small budget in some cases. As I think about that, I would appreciate the mix staying as diverse as possible. My hunch is that it may be easier to be the board chair of CAPSLO than it is for some of the smaller nonprofits that Michael just mentioned, only because CAPSLO has a far larger resource of paid professional staff to take on a lot of responsibilities. So their board may rely more on approving program and approving how things get focused as opposed to dealing with a specific shortfall in a given area or situation. I think some of those small boards may add some rather interesting discussion items to the mix.
Yeah, the small boards are, you know, as we were talking about, tend to also be the workers. Mm-hmm. So besides having to worry about governing the place, they have to do it, or there won't be a place to govern. One of the things that people may not realize, in California at least, there is a whole section of there's a corporate thing called the corporation code. We have a vehicle code, and we have a corporation code. In the corporation code, there's a nonprofit corporation code, and that's divided up into public benefit and religious and mutual benefit organizations. So if you're a public benefit, at least, you have a CEO even if you don't know that, because your president, you have to have a president of the board by the law. And if you don't have somebody else that's the CEO, by law, that person is the CEO and has any of the responsibilities by law that the chief executive officer of an organization shoulders. Same thing with a chief financial officer. So you have to have a treasurer, and if you don't have anybody else that's the CFO, then that CFO and the treasurer are that person. There's all kinds of other, you know, if you have insomnia and you need something interesting to read to put you back to sleep, check out the Nonprofit Benefit Corporation Code in California. If you need practice parsing long sentences.
Michael, you have no idea what a good lead-in that is to our break. It's a half past the hour. We're going to take a break for a moment. I think Michael has left us with something to think about reading or specifically
think about
not reading.
They'll be reading that instead of coming back.
Yeah, anyway. This is Central Coast Voices. We're talking with folks today from Spokes, which is a wonderful organization supporting and working with nonprofits to have a better community. We'll be back in a moment. Donna, it's over to you.
Coming up from 2 until 3 o'clock on Latino USA, first learn about the origins of nachos and why they have become one of the most popular snack foods in the United States. Their delicious flavor and immense popularity over the years has overshadowed their true history. The first nachos weren't invented in ballparks or designed for concession stands. They were created 80 years ago in a small town in Mexico, along the South Texas border. Then hear a conversation with Puerto Rican singer-songwriter Ilay as she reflects on the evolution of her music as a form of protest. That's Latino USA coming up later from 2 until 3 o'clock. We return now to Central Coast Voices with host Fred Monroe.
I thank you, Donna. Glad to be with you. If you're just joining us now, we're talking with the folks from Spokes, which is the Resources for Nonprofits organization in San Luis Obispo County. Michael Simpkins, who's the Executive Director, CEO of Spokes. Jordan Jerkovich, who is the Program and Communications Assistant for Spokes. I won't ask Michael to redo his joke from the preview before the break because it was just a great timing with an understanding for boards. If you happen to miss it when the program's on archives, go back and listen to it just before the break. It'll give you an interesting understanding of boards of directors. I want to make sure this doesn't get away from us. So you have a program calling the Board Academy coming up that starts next week. The only specific instance to this process I want to basically make sure we don't forget is that we're talking about a program that is being available remotely for a once-a-week session over a couple of months. And I say that only for our listeners because I don't want them to turn off the concept of being part of that process based upon, oh, I don't have the time to go someplace and sit in for days and days of stuff. So please share with us what that involved with, what it takes to sign up for it if you're interested. I'm going to put my two cents in first, which is you don't have to be on a board or even have an idea of a board you're looking to serve at. It's a program that's open to anyone who would like the interest and information about what's involved with boards of directors and what they might like to know if they want to serve on one.
So, yeah, our Board Academy is coming up. Actually, it starts next Tuesday, and it is an annual program. Or was it ever biannual, Michael?
We've done it twice a year sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a training program for people interested in nonprofit board service. You could be an incoming board member who's new or somebody who is currently serving on a board and just needs to brush up on your skills a little bit. But like I said, it's an 8-week program. It's every Tuesday for 1 hour on Zoom, aside from the last session, which happens to be on a Thursday. And you do not have to take all of the sessions. You can pick and choose, although it's great to take them all. And yeah, it's a training opportunity on a variety of topics that will help you to best serve in your role as a nonprofit board director. So some of the topics are board basics, insurance and risk management, financial health, diversity and inclusivity, maintaining a healthy board. What did I miss? Did I get financial health in there? Legal and ethical issues.
Maintaining a healthy board.
Maintaining a healthy board. We have different presenters for each class, some local experts, and Michael teaches a few of them as well. And you can sign up at spokesfornonprofits.org, and there's more information on our website.
If you type in the word spokes in Google, it will generally fill in the rest of finding you without a problem. Which is handy, because I realize a lot of people listening to the radio, if they don't have the ability to write down a note of what an actual web address is, it seems we underestimate the ability for Google and other organizations to find you when you want to be found. You can give us a call if you have any questions for right now about the upcoming Academy or Spokes in general, and that's at 805-781-3875. 805-781-3875. I will mention also that if you have some questions or information you'd like expanded upon with related to spokes, you can send us an email at voices@kcbx.org, and your email will get forwarded on to our guests. And if you're a regular listener, you probably have voices@kcbx.org. Buried somewhere in your files, so you won't forget that, but we'll pass on any information that you have questions about or comments to our guests. It occurred to me, and I want to be careful I don't step on anybody's toes. I don't mean my guests, but I mean our listeners. I suspect there are people who are maybe good candidates for your academy because they've either had past or involvement with an organization or current interest with an organization, and they're not quite sure how boards operate. So they may not have an interest in being on a board, but have an interest on having a better understanding of why the board for organization X is doing such and such and not doing such and such instead. So that kind of educational tool, I think, is available for people too.
And we should mention, too, besides the Board Academy, which really is designed for someone that's going to be on a board. I mean, it could be for someone who is thinking about being on a board and really interested in all those topics, and or a board, somebody that's been on a board for 3 or 4 years but never really – they don't know what their job is other than to go to the meetings. But we also have a 45-minute, we just call it Board Service 101, and we offer it every 2 or 3 months, and it's also in Zoom. And it is just for – it's just what it sounds like. It's just – this is what's involved in being a member of a board. It's not training to do it. It's just an overview of what your responsibilities would be, what you would likely be asked to do. And a little section of it is how to find the right board for you to be on.
That's a very good point. And it occurred to me as you were saying that one of the things that surprises me, or doesn't surprise me, but comes into play the most with boards I've served on and one that I still serve on, is that nonprofit boards have to file tax returns. We think about something that a tax return is something that a for-profit corporation or business has to file, or an individual, a person, or a sole proprietor of a business. But I think for a lot of people, it doesn't occur to them that there is literally a very complex tax return for nonprofit corporations, which I would add into the fact, which is one of the reasons why I have avoided being the treasurer of any board I serve on.
It's a very, very good point. In the jargon, it's called an informational return because you're not paying taxes, mm-hmm. but it happens at the very same time of the year, and there's an IRS form to fill out. But there are actually three levels of it, according to the level of your annual revenue. And so if your organization's annual revenue is $50,000 or less, it's a very simple online, you can't even do it by mail. It takes about 5 minutes to fill out. I think it's $250,000, there's another breaking point that there's a much simpler form, but it's still more information. And like on the cheap one, not the cheap one, the least expensive, no, whatever. You don't say how much money your income was. You just say, we swear it was $50,000 or less. And then the next form up, you actually have to say we got this much money and this is how we spent it in summary form. And then, as you were saying, if you have more than that, and I would Slow Rep is an example, then you need a CPA that you either pay or you have on the board that's going to fill this long thing out. But something that Spokes deals with unfortunately with some frequency are small nonprofits that don't realize they have to do that. And the federal law is that if you don't turn in your annual informational return in three consecutive years, your tax exemption is automatically revoked. And then
that can get very expensive very quickly, I'm assuming.
It can. In the first couple of years, and once it's revoked, you're not allowed to accept charitable donations. Well, you can accept them, but you can't tell the person that gave it to you, oh, we're tax exempt and you can claim that on your as a deduction on your income tax. And so I think it's 2 years. If you rectify that within 2 years, it's pretty simple. But if you've ignored it for 3 years, we find we'll get these 7, 8, 10 years, and suddenly a new treasurer comes in and realizes that we've been revoked for 3 years. Then you have to go through the whole application process, another $675 fee to reinstate yourself, and it's a morass of paperwork. So it's just so frustrating when organizations, the bigger ones know it. I mean, but the small ones that end up revoked just because they didn't know any better. I mean, and there are tax exempt organizations that are not charitable. But they're so, and you were talking about 501c4s mm-hmm. earlier, Fred. So I became treasurer of one, a 501c4, and just happened to look us up on the IRS website. Our exemption had been revoked 7 years ago. And when I did the research, it's because the treasurer at that time thought he knew better. Oh, no, we're just... we don't have to do that. Well, fortunately, we did. And
he didn't attend Board Academy, I'm assuming.
No. And I mean, our that organization.
Yeah, don't let this frighten you away from going to the academy or getting involved in a board. But continue, Michael.
Well, in that particular case, the organization's income was about $8,000 a year. So all that would have been done is fill out this simple little online form, or in the very earliest days, it used to be a postcard. All the information you answered was on one side of a postcard. And instead, because of the revocation, to get us back in the good graces, we had to file 7 of the full forms, pay, and then fill out a new application, pay the $675 and for the application fee. And if we wanted it retroactive, we had to write this long thing explaining why we couldn't have done the right thing for 7 years in a row and how we were convinced we would not forget the next time. It was an ordeal, and then it was, but we succeeded. We succeeded.
So having just heard that, my hunch is one of the things that Spokes is involved in, and we may want to get into some more details, is if you happen to, for some reason, be involved with an organization that wants to form a nonprofit, what can Spokes offer them as far as some indication as to what the process is, or what can you do to refer them possibly to a nonprofit attorney or accounting firm that would give them the opportunity to start that kind of thing?
Well, I can go back to the fact you mentioned Spokes members. Spokes is a membership organization. One of the ways that we get some income to run Spokes is through membership fees. And so what do you get for your membership? Well, one of the things you get for your membership is we keep a list of referrals that, you know, CPAs, attorneys, bookkeepers, people who will come facilitate your...
people who've learned from their errors, yes, how not to do it. Okay.
And but we also will start with you, just here's what's involved. I mean, we've got on our website, we offer quite a bit of stuff for free because we are a public benefit corporation. So if you go to the Spokes website, there's one whole section of, so you want to start a nonprofit? You're thinking of starting a nonprofit? Here's what's involved in that. And then if a person, as somebody I talked to earlier today, wants to start a new nonprofit, then if they want to actually have us help them do it, then, you know, we'll walk them through the process. That'll cost them a little more. If they want to do it themselves, there's some paperwork to be done, then it's part of their membership that when they have a question, I'm not sure what this means, what should I put here kind of thing, then they just can call and get, you know, get some help that way without any additional fee. And then if they were really looking at, they're going to be a nonprofit with the potential of hundreds of thousands of dollars a year of income, then they would probably want to do, you know, especially on their bylaws, maybe look into something more, you know, legal assistance and stuff. But whether you're going to be $1,000 or $500,000, it's the same one-page form to fill out on to incorporate, for instance, as a nonprofit public benefit corporation. But then your operating documents, your bylaws, your internal stuff is going to need to be much more complex the bigger you think you're going to be. One of the things that's hard for them is that when they fill out their application to the IRS that's the complicated thing, to get recognized as a nonprofit. They have to put in a budget for the first 3 years of operation of how much are you going to be bringing in different categories, and how much is that for program revenue, and how much is that coming from donations?
And the usually, IRS is not asking for a dreamscape. They want a real idea.
Yeah. It's like you have to think it through. And that's what it takes more than I'm just passionate about this thing and I'm going to start a nonprofit tomorrow.
I want to transition from that into the other side of the question, which is what is involved and what can Spokes work with for people who want to dissolve a nonprofit? My hunch is if there's 1,500 nonprofits in San Luis County, there are some that get dissolved on a regular basis that may need some help.
And I wish there weren't the other category, which is defunct but not dissolved.
We just stopped doing anything. Yeah, we can talk about that.
But to actually, you know, complete the process of closing up shop, dissolving. In California, it's a little bit tedious, but not complicated. But the sticking points, if you for small ones. It's almost, in some ways, harder for small ones. If your income has been $50,000 or less, I'm working with one right now, then you've only filled out the simple IRS form where you check off $50,000 or less.
There used to be a postcard form.
There used to be a postcard. And so before you can dissolve, you do have to be in the good graces of the IRS and the good graces of the Franchise Tax Board and the Secretary of State. So first, let's assume that at least you've kept up all your annual reports. But to dissolve, you have to provide, since you don't have any concrete information in your federal report that shows how much money you actually took in and how you spent it. Because the attorney general's in charge of making sure the charities are using this charitable money for what they said they were going to use it for. They're the oversight. So you have to provide 3 years of your past 3 years of financial records to the attorney general. You have to, and some organizations, like, they don't even have that. You know, they just have a check register, maybe. You know, and then you also have to, whatever money you have left, you must donate to another 501c3, and that has to be approved by the attorney general. So part of your dissolution application package to the attorney general's office is, this is the 501c3 we want to give our money to, and you have to also give their articles of incorporation and information about them, because the attorney general is going to check and make sure you're giving your money, like, to another 501c3 that hasn't had their tax exemption revoked
again.
Is current with
in
the Secretary
standing,
of State.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not
a good phrase. In good standing.
Yeah. So it's not complicated, but it's there's a number of steps, and they can, any one of them can trip you up if you haven't been well managed up to this point, because you won't have the information that you need to provide, and you have to go somehow come back up with it or rectify a bunch of things that you hadn't been taking care of.
One of the things that one of you said, and it occurred to me, maybe an issue we want to just address real quickly. You are a membership organization. There may be people who are listening to the program who are part of the board or a chair of a board or an executive director of a small nonprofit that's not a member of Spokes. What's involved in the process of becoming a member of Spokes?
Well, that's a good question to ask right now, Fred, because we're actually having a white sale right now. So you can actually
a January white sale
that goes.
Wait a second, nonprofits that have bargain sales.
Oh,
okay.
That's right.
That's hard to explain. Okay, go ahead.
So we have, you know, different types of membership. So there's an organizational membership, an individual membership. There's year-long memberships. There's monthly memberships. So for the white sale, for example, right now you can get an organizational membership, which would, you know, anybody who's in your organization can take advantage of, you know, discounts on classes or any of the resources Spokes provides for $100.
So that's a way for an executive director who has a board chair that hasn't been participating, for the executive director to prod them into participating in Spokes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, yeah, right now, you know, we have a lot of executive directors signing up, you know, incoming board members for Board Academy. They're using their membership, mm-hmm. and they're getting a discount on the Academy. So any nonprofit can take advantage of Spokes' resources, but there are special discounts and offerings that go along with having a membership.
Yeah, for a couple of examples. So the regular price for a membership for a year is $275. But this is the second year we've done a January only. You can renew, even if you're still got 6 months left on your regular membership, you can renew now, and it'll add another year to the end after that next 6 months is over. So $100 for a year. If you are a Spokes member, each of these Board Academy sessions is $25. If you're not a board member, you're welcome, but it's $40 per session. So we all of our classes are open to anyone, but the rate, the registration fee is always less for the members.
So it's not an expensive organization to become part of. It's finally what is important.
No.
We're getting down to the last few minutes, and as most of our listeners know, I talk too much, and I want to make sure that my guests get the chance for the last word. Jordan, let's start with you. What do you want to make sure our listeners don't forget from today's program?
Yeah, I think I would just say, you know, don't be fearful. I think what I'm taking away from the interview, don't be fearful of board service. There's opportunities to learn what it's about. You have a local resource here in Spokes that is, you know, willing to train you, and it can be a really valuable, amazing experience. So we encourage you to take advantage of the resources we provide, including the Board Academy, which, like I said, is coming up starting next week, but there's 8 different sessions to get involved in. And as Michael mentioned, also our Board Service 101 courses that I think those are actually free to anybody. Mm-hmm. Right, Michael?
Those are free.
Yeah. So, join our mailing list. You can go to spokesfornonprofits.org. You can join our mailing list and make sure you receive our newsletter so you know what's happening and can sign up for the resources we provide.
Great. Thank you. Michael, parting shots.
Well, she said it all.
Well, that's okay. We're a little short on time, so that you can leave it with that, but you can also put in your own 2 cents, please.
A fast 2 cents is just part of the board service is not just feeling good about what you're doing for the organization, but you meet new people who have the same passion that you have that you might never have come across otherwise. So there's a lot of kind of just personal benefit outside of your service to the organization. That's just directly for you.
Good point to end it on, because it's if you're doing this and you're not having a rewarding part of the experience, you're probably on the wrong board.
Yep.
Yeah. This has been Central Coast Voices. I thank you for joining us today. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be hosting the program. We don't have all of the things finalized for her program next week, but Chris Kington will be here. And this is a production of KCBX Public Radio. We could not do this without public radio and the support of KCBX. Thank you to Donna Cheek, who's been our engineer in studio today. I'm glad to have her with us. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org with feedback, questions for our guests, or comments on the program in general, and we would always love to hear from you. Thank you to Jordan Jerkovich, who was one of our guests today, and Michael Simpkins, both from Spokes. And as you can probably tell from this conversation, a good organization to be involved with. So I thank them for joining us today. This has been Central Coast Voices.